Welcome to Two Woods Four Quarters, a Harlequins podcast. My name is Will, and I'm joined by my cousin Michael as we review this week's Harlequins activities. Coming up on this episode, we pay tribute to Joe Marchant as he wins landmark 150th cap for the club. We then discuss some business ideas to help grow the club, should they have done a screening this week. Then the match review, a breakdown of the clash in Cape Town that saw Harlequins fall just short. And finally, Project Harlequins. What does the club need to do next to start the rebuild now, ahead of next season? But before we kick off, Mike, it's the Easter holidays for you. Are you hungover? Are you well?
First proper day of the Easter holidays. Saturday, last game of the season for me. 3-1 win, a few beers at the end of the season. And I've had a little round of golf this morning. I can chill out on a Sunday afternoon. I've not got the Sunday blues. The sun's doing its best to poke through. And
it's a lovely day today.
I've had a nice day. I'm going to go for a couple of beers this afternoon as well with a couple of my teacher pals because none of us have got any work in the morning. So yeah, I'm looking forward to the next 2 or 3 weeks.
Can't relate.
Unfortunately, we are not going to have much sort of good news rugby-wise to look forward to. Europe's over. Domestically, we are probably all done. So unfortunately, we haven't got anything sort of major to look forward to in a rugby sense, not in terms of results anyway.
But well, I don't know about you, mate.
Still some big games. You've got something to look
forward to. Huge game coming up. Biggest game left this season. Forget big summer kickoff. Harlequins Amateurs at the Stoop is coming up. So
give it a plug. Come on, give it a plug.
Well, I don't know. No information has been communicated yet, but it typically happens after the last home game of the season, which by default will be Newcastle at the Stoop. So I'm wondering if it's going to happen around then, 15th of April. After that, we might see the Quins Amateurs running out on the hallowed turf, of which I hope to be a part of it. So we'll see what happens with that. But that's pretty much all I'm excited by between now and the end of the season. There is big summer kickoff. There is a chance of getting qualification for next year's Champions Cup, should we get the right results in the last three games, which you hope we would. But I mean, the sorry tale of the tape is that we've won two of our last 11. We've conceded a whole host of tries. I think there was a stat Austin Healy posted on Twitter. We've conceded 104 tries in the last 26 games or something, which averages over 104. Four a game. Yeah, I think the average was we concede a bonus point in terms of tries every single game, which is absolutely horrendous when you think about it. But we'll get into the doom and gloom of rugby performances shortly. We'll start off with a bit of good news and a bit of success for one of our own, for one of the most liked players in the squad, for one of the most gifted athletes I've ever seen don the quarters, Joe Marchant, 150 caps. What a place to do it at the Cape Town Stadium in front of a record crowd for a club game. Beautiful venue. He had a lovely week with his mates playing for Quins. Managed to get a try too. A word on him and what he's done for this club. Unfortunately, we're losing him at the end of the season, but very, very well thought of.
Yeah, probably quite a special place to do it. I can't imagine when he first started playing senior rugby at Harlequins, he would have thought that he'd have got 150 caps in Cape Town. I can't imagine that was on anyone's agenda. But yeah, pretty special player, isn't he? Having been a part of the furniture for a long time, had a bit of a stint down in Auckland for 6 months as well, went out and played some rugby out there.
God, that feels like a long time ago.
I know. And we've had a few chats about what his departure means for the rest of the squad. And we are lucky to have a premiership-ready replacement in Luke Northmore, who's started at 13, and Joe's been moved out to the wing the last couple of weeks. I think that might be a trend that continues over the next sort of 3 or 4 weeks of the season, going towards the back end. We'll see how things pan out. But I think one of the things about him that you said earlier, he is an incredibly special athlete. You see him on the wing, you see him jumping at restarts, you see him throwing NFL-style passes from lineouts from 50 yards. Remember that in the lockdown era when there are no fans in the ground? Yeah. He's throwing 60-yard tight spirals as a quick throw-in. Yeah, special athlete. You know, versatile, plays at 13, plays at 14. I wonder what would have happened to him 6 months ago had he been more involved with Eddie Jones's England, whether he would have decided that maybe his international time was coming to an end. He was obviously involved in this year's Six Nations. Maybe if Jones had kept him in and around that England squad, would he have made the decision to go to Paris? Who knows?
Or even if Eddie Jones had left sooner and Steve Borthwick had come in and he'd realised he'd be a part of Steve's plans a little bit more so than Eddie's. I wonder if that would have influenced his thinking. But as you say, a total freak athlete. And he's one of those players, I think, because we're so well equipped in the backs, we feel like we're well covered there in terms of the full setup and dynamic of the squad. there are other losses that are slightly bigger, such as Wilco Lowe, in my opinion. And we've got ready-made replacements in Luke Northmore, and Oscar Beard's getting more minutes, and I'm impressed with him every time I see him. However, Joe Marchant, I think, is going to be one of those players. We don't realise how much we miss him until he's gone. Yeah, I think the little niche skills that not many athletes across the world can do, let alone rugby players, in terms of the way he's always competing at kickoffs and often wins them and gets us the ball back in crucial times. This weekend against the Stormers was one of them. After we just conceded, we scored pretty sharpish off the back of a kickoff where we won the ball back. And then some of the skills in terms of taking crossfield kicks, literally tippy-toeing along the touchline and managing to stay in field, and his versatility across the back line as well, being able to cover both wings as well as 13. He is going to be a real miss. I really do think that. I think we won't realise it until he's gone.
Do you remember that try he scored against Northampton away at Franklin's Gardens last season where he...
So he didn't score it. It was Hugh Jones.
Well, sorry, you're right. You're spot on. He didn't score the try, but he sort of threw himself into the air, tiptoed along the sideline and tapped it back into play for Hugh Jones. But it
goes down against his name in my eyes. He did all the work for it.
It's a bit like one of those catches in international cricket where the bloke throws himself over the boundary, one out, and lobs it back into touch for his mate who takes a simple catch. But he scores a lot of tries, Joe Marchant. And probably I think you're right. We don't appreciate actually how good he has been for such a long time and how much we're going to miss him until he is gone. You know, being able to do both wings and 13, those little things down the touchline, winning restarts. Unbelievable athlete and a proper try scorer as well.
Yeah, and I think this is probably a case of the state of play at the moment, and it'll be an unpopular opinion for sure. You'll probably disagree with it, but Luke Northmore the last few weeks hasn't been himself. I've not been too impressed with him, and I know he's just returning from injury and he's probably still finding his feet, but he's not quite found the form that got him in the England squad at one point, if you remember. And you referenced it earlier. I do think the remaining games need to be Luke Northmore in the 13 shirt to A, help him find his feet again. He's probably still building up a little bit of match fitness, trying to go 80 minutes. He hasn't gone too many 80s since he's returned from injury, but it's going to be his shirt for the long term now. So give it to him now. We've not got anything to play for. Leave Marchant out there on the wing to do his little pieces of magic and still be involved in the squad. And when the 60, 70 minute marks roll around and you can play around with your back line, then do that if you need to. But I'll miss Joe Marchant massively. I think he's a great character. I've had the pleasure of meeting him a few times. One of my good stories actually is when I was walking to the stoop. It was for a Friday night game. Must have been autumn internationals time, and he wasn't in the England squad, but he wasn't in the Quinn squad either. And I was walking down to the stadium, and he was just walking down by himself with a couple of ciders in his hand. And I just had a little chat with him. Didn't ask him too many uncomfortable questions about England, but picked his brains on how he was feeling. And he was feeling good. He was realistic. He's a very grounded individual. And he even offered me one of his cans of cider, which I politely declined because cider is not my drink. But he's a great lad. And I think he's going to have a whale of a time in Paris. I think he's really going to suit that team. He's going to have an unbelievable city to be playing rugby in, and good luck for him for the next chapter.
Proper Harlequins man, isn't he? We'll miss him a lot. We wish.
About the facial hair though. What's this? What's going on? Why has he done that? Why is Caden doing that? Nick David's got a tash going on. What's happening with the backs at the moment? Is there some kind of bet going on? Have you got to do this? Maybe I can understand Caden because since he's done it, he's scored loads of tries. But even before he's done it, he scored loads of tries. Joe Marchant has probably scored more since he's done it as well. So I don't know if it's some kind of, you know, how some players
superstition.
Some players grow out a mohawk and they'll shave it when they score or something. I don't know what it is, but
Marcus has got
weird
that
little tash and goatee. That needs to stop.
Marcus has got that little sort of chin strap, sort of tufty bit. A bit like what Jonah Lomu had on, or old school Ronaldo R9 had.
Yeah, I think it suits Marcus when it's not too thick, when it's kind of like a light touch of facial hair. When it gets too thick, it's a lot. Well, same with Caden's, actually. It needs to be a light touch. His is quite well-groomed. March has got a little bit of work to do with his. I quite like the stubble look. That, for me, that was peak Joe Marchant.
There's been a lot of peak Joe Marchant. We're going to miss him.
There has been. I wonder if we'll see Luke Northmore with the old tash and goatee to fill the void. The entire back line of it. Andre's got a bit of a tash going on as well, hasn't he?
Well, Andre's thinning out on the top a little bit, so he's trying to compensate by having it on his face instead.
You know he's had his hair done as well.
Do you reckon?
Of course he has, yeah. I think it was Hugh Jones that leaked it when he went on another podcast.
Well, he's been on the old
turkey. He wasn't allowed on ours, so he went and leaked it somewhere else. apparently he's had his hair done, and so is Danny.
Oh, Danny, you can tell. Danny's
obvious. Also, he admitted it in a BT interview, didn't he? But I'm pretty sure, I'm pretty sure I've read and seen somewhere that Andre's had his lid done as well. But
you getting yours done at some point as well? The corners are a bit thin.
Mine is absolutely fine. Don't you dare. Don't you dare. Mine is fine. Few more early starts and late finishes at work, and that might change. For the time being, I'm good. Let's move on, because we've got a healthy review of the match to do, but I wouldn't say healthy, but it is extensive. But before we do that, I want to talk about a few business ideas that I feel like the club might have missed out on this weekend. I think it's such an anomaly having South African teams in Europe, and it will be hugely controversial whichever side of the fence you sit, whether you like them in Europe because it makes the competition more international and more exciting, and you get trips like we've had the last two match days in Durban and then Cape Town, or you might hate it because you can't go. And I sit somewhere in the middle. I love going to the away games and I miss them dearly. And I'm a little bit disappointed we were robbed of two this year, but I quite enjoyed seeing our lads out in South Africa for a full week and have a good crack on a dry track. But I feel like bringing it back to London, there's so many fans that were trying to find a pub. Maybe it's just because I was struggling in Clapham Sports Bar and Grill to get the commentary on because there was so much else going on. The Cabbage Patch is our place. It's the Harlequins pub. They always do an unbelievable screening there. It was sold out and you get your core Harlequins fans there. And only 30 travelling fans went to Cape Town. I think Durban was around 12 because my dad was part of it and they donned themselves the Durban Dozen. I don't know what the Cape Town 30 christened themselves as, but there's a lot of Harlequins fans back home that were trying to find a way to watch the game. And I think it was, and this will act as a nice segue for the match review actually, but I can't help but feel there was a good opportunity to grow the club and expand its audience this weekend, whether you do a screening somewhere in London, which is unmissable and iconic, somewhere like Battersea Power Station, where it's social media shareable. You get a lot of footfall through that space. It's an amazingly iconic and eye-catching space. If it was to be funded by a sponsor like DHL, who effectively owned that fixture, given it was against the DHL Stormers, I just think if a sponsor is able to pay for that, they can do their own activation space like they do at match days, whether it be those inflatables or passing challenges, whatever DHL want to do. Ultimately, they're funding it. And then you can have a merchandise stand. So Quinns could be selling some caps, some shirts, whatever. You've obviously got the game on for people to walk by in the same way that people do that for Wimbledon and how you can kind of walk by, dip in, dip out. It was a good opportunity for them to promote Big Summer Kickoff.
Almost if anyone like a walking into like a sort of open air sort of movie theatre
in a big central London space where, I mean, we're talking about season tickets a lot at the moment and a lot of people aren't renewing, and a lot of people won't like me talking about casual fans, but it's so important to grow the club and expand our fan base. But if you were to do a screening in a big open air kind of iconic London space with casual footfall, you could have got people come down and engage with the club, even if it's for 10 minutes to watch a bit of the game, or their kid might like the shirt, so they buy the shirt, or you could have promoted Big Summer Kickoff and anyone engaging in that space could have got a little voucher where you can bring your kid along for a fiver, or your adult ticket's only a tenner. Because let's be real, Big Summer Kickoff's going to be really hard to sell now. It's been unfortunate it's come so soon after big game. I don't know the sales. Do you know the sales off the top of your head?
Not Tom. I think I saw 35,000 had been done.
Yeah, I think it's definitely below 50. So, and the top tier won't be open, but there'll still be thousands of seats left. So just get them sold. Get the casual fans in. It's ultimately the Big Summer Kickoffs and big games are about the casual fans and reaching new audiences. And maybe a couple of them will get hooked on Quinns and stick around. And that's how the club's going to go. But I mean, even we could have done something cool. I don't know if we'd have done a live pod because it's quite niche and you'd have had a lot of casual fans there that probably can't engage with that. But I'm sure we could have thought of something fun. And a lot of the men's squad were away. It was a full squad effort going out to South Africa as like a little mini tour, as they always do. But Harlequins women players could have been in that space, kind of engaging with young girls and being visible and talking about the Women's Six Nations that's currently on and promoting the Game Changer, which is coming up against Wasps in, I think, mid-May. It might be the 13th of May. Or even advertising season tickets for the Premier 15s next season, because I believe there's separate season tickets for that, isn't there? So I just think that would have been a good space. And obviously, organisation and cost are the two main factors there. But if you've got a sponsor covering it who benefits from it greatly, I think organisation is worth it.
It would have been interesting to see Battersea Power Station plastered in yellow and red DHL logos. I'm not sure quite how
they'd have to have done it in a way that is approved. But I'd have loved it. I mean, I live the other side of Batty, I definitely would have gone down. And maybe I'm only saying it because I would have quite liked to have watched it somewhere other than a little quiet, dark corner of Clapham Sports Bar and Grill where you could barely hear the commentary. But
it's an interesting point, though, because the general, like, I don't know where I'm getting this from. I think it might have been around the sort of COVID time where things were open, but not quite. And I remember seeing a football ground. I need to try and actually find out who it was. It might be one of the Scottish grounds who had a game somewhere that obviously nobody could travel to. And everyone watched the game in the ground, you know, five or six seats spaced apart on the big screen. Yeah. That might have been quite a cool way of doing it. You know, a few more people in the stoop, so a few beers.
Well, I mean, yeah, it was around the World Cup as well. If the stoop had done World Cup screenings, that would have been quite cool. I know, obviously, the recent one was in the winter time. It would have been trickier. But the Euros before then is another example. The way I'm thinking is I wouldn't do it at the stoop or the patch because the patch is always sold out with hardcore Quins fans. That's an unbelievable Quins venue that is absolutely perfect as it is. The stoop, again, doesn't really open up on a non-match day because I imagine it's quite expensive and it would need good ticket sales to do it. But even if it did open up, it would be pure Quins fans, the diehards that are already hooked on the club. I think this was a good opportunity to expand and get a little bit further out to a new audience.
I like the idea. I like the territory. I mean, it's a lot of it to do with that is, you know, trying to bank on the weather being a bit good as well. I can imagine some screening in the pissing rain.
You're right. But I mean, Easter weekend, I think it's just before Easter weekend. And we had a trial run with Durban. We knew Durban, we were going to face similar challenges where people were trying to find somewhere to watch it. And yeah, I just think the fans at home almost got forgotten a little bit in that sense.
Very quickly now, then, that our European campaign and has unfortunately come to an end. We bigged it up last week saying that this was our challenge and this was our chance to sort of continue our season and enhance our season and go a little bit further. Now it is over. We've had a year of it. Where do you see the South African side sitting in the competition? What's your thoughts? What's your feelings? I know that there's a lot of voices on social media and sort of in the fan base that I agree with that, you know, we miss out on a couple of days a year where we don't get to go and watch our side, whether it's in France or Ireland, because you're playing in, you know, the other side of the world. But
yeah,
where do you think you sit on it in terms of, is it good for the competition? Is it bad? Does it make the European thing a little bit not quite, I don't know how to describe, does it demean the European stuff a little bit, the history and the heritage that European rugby has? Or
maybe a bit. Rugby's got to change. Rugby's dying. Rugby needs something to shake it up a bit. And we've expanded to a new continent. Like, I get it's not called European rugby anymore, really, is it? Because we're playing in Africa. But I think they've been good for the competition. I quite like the fact that we've played the Stormers and the Sharks this year. I think that's quite cool. I think that makes Quins a bit more of a global club. There was a tweet I saw. It might have been Friends of the Stoop. If it's not and it's somebody else, I apologise for forgetting who it was. But there should be a little system in place where if you draw a South African team one year, then you don't then draw them the next year. So, for example, in next season's Champions Cup, touch wood, we get there. We should, but let's see. Then in our group, we would have a non-South African team and another non-South African team just to make it a little bit more affordable for the fans and realistic for us to do the away days, because that's the magic of it for us. And whilst I appreciate the growth of the game and expanding to new continents, and they've been good, they've been entertaining. I watched the Stormers at the weekend thinking they're playing the Quins style better than Quins. I thought they were brilliant to watch, especially for their first try. So my take on it is let's not rip the script up straight away. It seems to be going reasonably well. It just needs to have more consideration for the fans. And I think if we then don't draw a South African team next year, that's a good compromise for me. We've done our time now. Let's get back supporting our boys on the road.
I quite liked your... I can't remember when it was when we were talking about it. There was someone that said that we can't play the South African side in a semi-final in South Africa. Maybe they play a neutral venue somewhere in Europe. And I know that sort of... You know, it's the same for the South Africans, I suppose, isn't it? In their champion, yeah, in their URC,
fans as well.
In their URC cup, you know, they can't travel to Cardiff or Leinster or Ulster or someone like that or Italy, you know, every other weekend. That's just not feasible unless you've got the bucket load of cash. But maybe those, you know, quarterfinal European weekends. And I know this is sort of plucking this out of thin air a little bit, but in the AFL, obviously they travel across Australia. It's a huge place to travel from Western Australia to Sydney, New South Wales, Melbourne, wherever it is. They've got a round this year, I think it's round five or six, where every game of the weekend is being played at the same stadium in Adelaide, like the Magic Weekend, and they play on a Friday night, a Saturday night, a Sunday night, and maybe a Thursday as well. I wonder maybe in a semi-final, if you got there, or a quarter-final, potentially you could have a neutral venue somewhere in Europe where there's a game on the Friday, the Saturday, and the Sunday, and you've got, you know, three sets of fans all going there. I mean, the town, it has to be somewhere big, because otherwise the town gets overrun, nobody can get a hotel room, but something like that, you know, a way of just making it a little bit more accessible for fans, because obviously it is tricky trying to finish work on a Friday and get a flight to South Africa at midnight that lands at 2 o'clock on Saturday afternoon, and then you've got a
not about the logistics for me, it's about the affordability.
It's a lot of money, isn't it?
It is a lot of money. It's a lot of money. And also, to rub salt into the wounds, we watched Gloucester go down to the south of France against La Rochelle and run them unbelievably close. There was one moment where I actually thought I might want Gloucester to win, and then I gave myself a little slap around the face and realised it would have been much better if La Rochelle won, and they did in the end. But it just makes you think we were one position away from getting that away day ourselves, and we could have been there, and who's to say we couldn't have run them close as well. And then you look in the other draw going on today with Exeter and Montpellier, an absolute classic of a European Cup tie that went to extra time and then drew, and then I think it was decided by try scored in the end, and Exeter have actually won that one. And it makes you think we'd have had Exeter in the next round, and we've just thumped them at Twickenham, absolutely thumped them. Whisper it quietly, but we were in with a sniff of a European semi-final,
which is mental considering we scored 3 tries in the last 7 minutes.
Yeah, that is disappointing. Anyway, that is a good point to allow us to transition into Cape Town. Let's get to Cape Town and talk about the Stormers versus Harlequins. It's the first time we've ever played each other, if I'm not mistaken. It was a record-breaking crowd for a club game.
Came to see the Quins, didn't they?
They came to see the Quins. They got a good game in the end, eventually. Really, really frustrating. So, well, I'll start off by saying that neither of us were going to watch the game because we both had 3 o'clock kickoffs. But unfortunately, my game got postponed because of a waterlogged pitch. But I wasn't too mad about it because I had a feeling all week that this could be a hell of a game that we might cause a bit of an upset in. And I was pleased to be able to watch. And within the first minute of the game, they're scoring after playing some ridiculous seven-star rugby, offloading and kicking through and cutting lines, and their number six, who was exceptional, I thought, all day. I think it's Fury, who ended up getting 2 tries and man of the match. He was awesome. He got the first try of the game. And at that point, I'm thinking it's going to be a high scorer because that's the exact way we want to play. If they're going to continue like that, there'll be a bounce of the ball that goes our way or their way. There's going to be gaps. There's going to be some hard lines cut. And it did turn out being a high scorer, but not the way we wanted it to. What are your thoughts at that point? Early days, we go a try down literally within the first minute.
So as you said, I was a 3 o'clock kickoff. So, well, actually, I was a 2:45 start. So I switched my phone on straight off the pitch, and I opened my phone, and about 150 messages in the WhatsApp group that I missed. I thought, right, I'm not going to scroll through all of them. I'll go straight onto the game. Clocked on about in the 50-minute mark, and I watched the sort of last bit in the car on the way back, and I've watched the highlights subsequently. Not a great start, was it? And I think you're right. That first try was almost sort of carbon copy of the way that we play. The ball goes to the edge and you go through two or three sets of hands, you break a tackle, look to be a little bit of soft defending on the edges, and then they go in under the post and score. Well, under the post, they go and score pretty early on. Having watched the highlights subsequently, the big thing that I seemed to gather from it that was really disappointing was our line-out defence. The second try they scored from Kitshov, the line-out just shuffles to the back.
I thought it was a brilliant move.
It was a brilliant move, but our sort of pod of line-out jumpers and lifters
don't follow them.
They don't follow them. They just stand there and watch. Then you think, like, it just looked a bit too simple. So line-out and driving maul defence. Yeah. They scored 2 or 3 off the driving maul all day, and it looked a little bit weak.
Well, I don't want to go on a rant about it, but the line-out again, and we're broken records here. Sorry if listening to us every single week and you hear us moan about the line-out, but I don't understand how you can go through an entire season knowing the line-out's an issue and not do anything about it. And we've obviously brought in Danny Wilson as line-out coach for next season, and we've signed Joe Launchbury for next season. But what about this season? We can't just call it null and void and we'll fix it next year. And I know the captain is the main man. Steph Louise is the Harlequins line-out, and he was due to be coming back, and then he had a setback. And then when he did come back, our line-out was epic. It was so good. Do you remember Rassing away in their little indoor stadium? And it was his first game back, and God, we were singing his name for most of the game. He was awesome. The way he dominated the line out and took that unbelievable one-handed catch. But he's on the shelf again, missed the last couple of games, and the line out has struggled again, particularly in defence. On our own 5-metre line, we can't seem to stop anything. There were a few moments that Dino Lamb in particular has impressed me with his growth this season. Last year was probably his breakthrough where he was exceptional in the loose and rampaging. This year he's been a little bit more considered and a little bit more useful in set piece play. And he intercepted two lineouts. He managed to steal two lineouts, but he slaps it down. The bounce of a ball either takes it straight back to them or bounces off the pitch. And it's really frustrating how the bounce of the ball doesn't go your way when everything else is also going against you. But he's impressed me in terms of his development at lineout time. But there's a little piece here and there that makes it seem like it's not an issue. There was even a moment where Jack Walker throws the double pump at the lineout and it's an immediate free kick to them. That's schoolboy. That is rookie.
Do you remember when we played Munster away and this was still in the Gusted era? It was the first time we wore that 50-50 blue and black shirt, the recycled ocean plastic one. And we had a really, really young side and we got absolutely obliterated at everything driving more lineout defence. They scored 3 or 4, I think. I remember Caden dancing in the corner and scoring a try towards the end of the game. Bit of a consolation, but it felt a little bit like that. We just had no answer. Every time the ball went up, they had their hands on it and the ball comes to ground and it just seemed like there was nothing to stop it. There was no presence, no organisation at either end of the lineup, whether they're throwing front or back, that meant we had any chance of slowing the ball down and making it into a contest where they've got, you know, referees calling use it and then you've got your back set up. It just felt so easy.
Well, I thought what was interesting is we knew it was going to be a physical clash. And I think our response to their opening try with Alex Dombrandt sort of bustling his way over the left flank to score was a good example of that. When we've got the ball and we want to be physical, we can really take it to them and we can get some good yardage against a big, strong, physical South African team.
That try didn't even look like it was a planned move where Dombrandt was always going to peel back to the short side. It just sort of looked like they hit the...
Split that way, didn't it?
Yeah, it just sort of split and fell for him. And obviously, he finished his tries...
I'm not sure who it was. It might have been Webb who kind of kept him in field and sort of latched on and drove him over and kept him straight, which was great. But even later in the game, when we're going through the phases, probably in the last 10 minutes, we're going to jump around a bit. It's probably my favourite bit of the game anyway, so forgive me. But even in those latter stages, we're carrying hard with intent. We're getting good yardage. Whereas for the rest of the game, in defence, we're sort of making negative tackles or there's a few loose arms or they're managing to offload out of it and they're gaining momentum. And it's just those uncoachables in defence. Like, you don't need to be able to coach that. Just a little bit more physicality, a little bit more fight, a little bit more dog. Maybe I'm being harsh because they are one of the most physical outfits we'll come up against at club level. But
I did read a match report from the game, actually, this morning. I can't remember if it was the BBC one or one of the other ones. But there was an interesting passage on there. And my dad actually said the same thing when I spoke to him this morning. He said that when we have attacked really well in the domestic competition this year, like we did against Exeter, like we did against, Exeter are probably at home and home and away this year. In games like that, where we are almost unstoppable at times, when we do play these sides, especially in Europe, big, well-drilled defensive sides, or even sides that attack in a similar way to us that can counter that, in the league against the likes of Saracens and Sale, you're really well-coached, organised sides. If things don't pan out for us and the way that we attack and we do all the amazing things that we do, we move the ball quickly, we attack loose shoulders, Andre's breaking holes. When that doesn't come up, when that plan A doesn't work, he reckons we just run out of ideas a little bit. We throw one or two speculative passes too many.
There was a few times where Marcus had the ball and he kind of stopped looking for options and there wasn't any. So we just kind of looked for a gap to poke it through.
Yeah.
Sort of hopingly. And I've never seen that from us.
A lot of that is playing off instinct, though, isn't it? A lot of that is instinct. Yeah. Marcus has got the ball. You don't want anyone else having the ball in that situation where something's broken down. You want it in his hands. It just seemed like we didn't have enough.
But he didn't even attempt anything himself. He kind of stopped. And at that point, it was like, I've got to put it to foot here. And for me, Marcus's confidence is absolutely shot. I think it's absolutely shot. I think going away with England, as he has done, not only in the Six Nations, but at the back end of last year, where he's not really known if he's the man or not. He's not got a good string of games. He's been pulled off at times. He's been put on for the last few seconds. He's been training with his arch rivals, Saracens, and we then go and play them and they do one on us. Same with Dombrandt. I can't wait for this season to end and I cannot wait for next season to start. where we can have our Harlequins back. They don't. They haven't come back looking like Harlequins. I also think we're not as fit this year. I feel like we're not as fit as well. I don't know if we're absolutely spent because they've been with England being worked to the bone for so long and they're instrumental in our play and maybe they're a bit fatigued. I just think there was a good question asked to us by Rugby Quinn saying, have we got enough leaders? I think we do. But then I thought about it and our leaders are sort of Joe, Danny, Domers, Marcus. Two of them are gone for most of the season. And then Danny's still getting silly yellow cards against Saracens and Joe getting suspended at times. Like,
it's an interesting point you make there with Marcus and Domers. And I know that we're sort of going off on a lot of tangents here because we don't want to talk too much about the game and the disappointment. But the interesting point you make about Marcus and Alex is that they've had really challenging seasons this year, really challenging, because it's not all been sunshine and roses at club level when they've come back from England or when they've gone away. You know, they've been away for long periods of the season. With, you know, Marcus got injured. Dom has played a lot of rugby with England in a pretty challenging campaign, you know, during February and March. But when they've come back to the Premiership, it's not been perfect for us. We've not won enough games. We've not won at all really since the turn of the year, and it's been really challenging.
Injured for a large part as well, wasn't he?
Yeah, exactly. But it's one of those things where you think, well, when we go into these European competitions and at the space we are now in, you know, domestically, how much do we change what we do next year? Do we still rely on the fact that we are all out attack, we score more than other teams, we don't defend as well because we know we're going to outscore people? We're obviously built, you know, on one of the best scrums in the league, but we're losing Wilco Lode next year.
And also, he's going to be a huge loss as well. I thought his carrying and his defence just monumental. He's a dump truck, isn't he?
Yeah.
There's no other prop out there like him in terms of in the loose.
I'm just sort of thinking in the next 6 months or so before we get into next season, and we don't want to wish the season away. We've still got a huge job on our hands, making sure that we qualify in the top six to get into the Champions Cup for next season.
I don't know, mate. I'm fairly...
Well, look, we've got Newcastle at home. We've got Bath at Big Summer Kickoff. Those are two games I expect to win. We go away to Leicester at the end of the season. They might have wrapped up third, have nothing to play for, put the Shags out, and we beat them at their place. We don't know. But we've had a tough year, and we need to look at that, and we need to think, right, as of next year, we know who's leaving. Are we getting the right players in? Are we getting the right coaches in? And are the systems and structures that we have currently in place good enough to win the Premiership every year? Are we good enough to be at the top four at the end of the year, every season, getting into the quarterfinal, semi-final stages of Europe?
I think we are already. I don't know what's happened this season. Well, I do know what's happened this season. I've made a list, and I'm going to read it out to you, and this probably segues us on quite nicely to our final agenda point, which is Project Harlequins and that rebuild. But I initially titled it an excuse list because it pretty much is an excuse list. But I've since crossed that out and written down perspective list. We've been dealt a really bad hand this year. We've had some big long-term injuries to incredibly important players. The likes of Will Collier has been out for a very long time. Tyrone Green has been out our entire season, bar two games, I think, three, four games. And also, he's still right up there on some of the statistics charts, which is absolutely absurd. James Chisholm had a rotten run with injury.
That was horrible to see.
He came back for a few games and he's been epic. He took the number seven shirt off Wev and then he picked up an injury in South Africa this week and his season is done. Just so unfortunate. Marcus, gone for the Autumn Internationals, then injured, then back for the Six Nations for England, not for us. And then we've had him back now where he seems out on his feet and not as sharp as he was last year or even the year before when we won the league. He needs a good break over the summer. Luke Northmore, been out for long periods. Lewis Liner, and then probably most important out of anybody is the captain and how important he is to our line-out, but also our leadership, right in the heart of our pack. So we've been dealt a really bad hand with injuries, but that's not the only thing. You've got to throw in internationals, the likes of Alex Dombrandt getting called up at the back of our scrum, the man that's been instrumental in cutting line breaks in open play, really important for the style of play that we have. You then don't lose one fly half in Marcus Smith. You lose two international fly halves in Tommy Allen. And you're still trying to play the same brand of rugby. So this probably falls on the coaches now. And that you can't force.
And you lose your attack coach.
And you lose your... Well, that's the next one. You lose your attack coach. Nick Evans goes with England. So it's been disruptive there again. Hugely successful for him and the club for him to be even involved with that England setup. But the fact we didn't replace him is absurd to me. I'm surprised there wasn't some kind of compensation in the contract that we would get a little bit of money to to find a replacement in that window, because you've got Jerry Flannery across defence and line out. He's already double hatting. You've then got Tabai doing contact and attack. He's now double hatting. You've got Adam Jones as the only other coach. Charlie Mulcrone doing skills. You're really light on the ground in terms of your coaching setup now. The biggest thing about Harlequins is their style of play and their attack, and you're not replacing your attack coach, even for that little six-week window. And we saw how costly that was. I just think that's a coaching error on our part, or a administration error on our part, not to replace a coach. But in terms of the coaching, going to call out a few other things as well. But we've just signed a line-out coach for next year, Danny Wilson. Brilliant. It frees up Jerry Flannery to get his teeth stuck into the defence. And this guy is a fierce competitor, Irish blood, really, really personal about defence. Let him study it and get good at it. He's going to be good next season. But to sign Danny Wilson as line-out and contact coach for next year, but then let him go to Leicester for the rest of this season, he must have been available. Absurd. Yeah. Absolutely absurd. We know we've got a line-out issue. We know our captain's out for the long term. We need to fix it now. And we're sat here now in April when this problem was going on 6 months ago, and nothing's changed. The only thing we've changed is to fix it for next year. This is professional sport. We can't just call the season null and void and think, all right, well, we'll fix it next year. What are we doing this year? And I know the players are trying their hardest, and there's some good players in there, with Kenningham's been immense at the line out, but he's been injured for times as well. And then you've got Dino Lamb, who's getting better and better and competing on opposition lineouts and stealing. But our own line out is the problem.
It's amazing how much key injuries can completely derail you. I mean, in 2021, I don't remember us having a key injury that completely derailed us. You know, we lost Andre and we lost Brownie for, you know, out of suspension. Tyrone Green then comes out of the woodwork and you think, holy hell, we've got a rock star.
Yeah.
But I don't remember having a really, really hurtful injury for a long period of time that season, you know, whether it was Marcus or Alex or Steph or whoever. I don't remember that happening. And we've had a whole host of them this year.
Yeah. But again, it's the importance of them and the role they play within the squad. Only Harlequins fans will know how important Steph Louise is to this club. If you're a fan of another club, you might not realise his importance. But yeah, the line out is notably better when he's involved. And given his track record with injuries, and we can't be overly reliant on one person, that's going to change. And it will change because we've got Joe Launchbury coming in as well, who is the line out general. We've got a coach coming in that can improve each individual player, particularly the younger ones as well, into leaders, I think, is the main thing. For me, part of Project Harlequins is the coaching. We need to get our coaching set up really watertight next year. This year felt a little bit sporadic, sometimes dealt through bad hands, such as losing Nev.
It does feel like some of these things have been out of our control, you know, losing Nev and losing, you know, the England boys, and a lot of injuries. A lot of it's been out of our control, but maybe that's...
But we know we're going to lose the England boys.
And that's a very good point, but it feels like maybe, you know, we've said it this year, the difference between our top end talent and our best 23. And again, we're not bagging the lads that are sort of in the second and third string spots. They're all good players in their own right. But the difference, I think, has probably been highlighted this year during that Six Nations period. And obviously it hurts that we lose a lot. You know, we've lost Jack Walker a lot, who arguably might not have been in the side had the likes of Cowan Dickey been fit, Marchant, you know.
For me, it's the system. Like, as you say, they're good players. It's the system. You look at the likes of Sale and Saracens. They win every week, bar a handful of times every season.
Which pains me, too.
I despise the pair of them. But they're both bloody good rugby teams. And I don't think the depth of Sale is any better than our depth. And they seem to be winning still. And I think it's their system. I think they've got a really simple, effective system that any player can slot into. Our system's a little bit more complex. It's a little bit more free-flowing. It's quite tricky to slot into that system if you're Lewis Yaltima coming in for 2 minutes at the end of every game, or you think about Will Edwards, who has probably played three games all season. He's all of a sudden our starting 10 because Tommy and Marcus are in international setups. Jack Walker's been starting all season and he's played a lot of 80 minutes, Jack Walker. We've got a great stable of young hookers, all getting rotated quite a lot. And I've not got a problem with that. They're all very good players and they can all come in and do a job. But it's quite hard to slot in when you don't get too much exposure to an environment. You look at Saracens, we know their squad's ridiculous and it's probably the best depth in the entire league. But some of their players are relatively unknown and they can come in and slot in fairly seamlessly. So I think it's less about, I think our squad's wicked. I think we've got one of the best squads in the league. I just think our system is perfect for when we are full stack, got everybody available. And as soon as a few key players drop out, it doesn't work anymore. And it's because our key players are absolute freaks.
When we went to Sale away this year and we beat them, do you remember we played that really pragmatic game style? We were kicking penalties. We were kicking a lot.
That was one of my favourite wins.
But do we, when we are missing, I think you're right, when we are missing the likes of Marcus and Domers and et cetera, you know, everyone knows the list. Do we have to change the way that we play?
I wonder if we change. I don't think it matters who's on the pitch or not. If you've got to win a game of rugby, there's an element of naivety to the constant attacking. And we all love it because it's worked for us for so long. And now it's stopped working and all of us have fallen out of love with it a little bit. But we didn't go for points once against the Stormers. And for all the pressure we had at the end of that first half, refereeing was horrendous, by the way. I'm not blaming our defeat on the referee, but it definitely sucked a lot of our momentum away from us and at least removed an element of opportunity for us to get something from the game. But when we're hammering their line just before half time, penalty after penalty after penalty, there's no card coming and we end up with nothing. Maybe three's an option there. It's a knockout game of European rugby. I just think it doesn't matter if it's Marcus Smith at 10 or Will Edwards. In the right moments, in the right fixtures, it's a psychology thing. We can change that. It's not a negative to take 3 points. It's game management. And in our WhatsApp chats throughout the Stormers game, we were saying, stay within 10 points all game and we've got a shot. I don't care if we're going into the last 10 minutes, 10 points behind. We can score 2 quick tries, bang, bang, just like that. And we know we've got that up our sleeve. And lo and behold, in the last 10 minutes, we managed to score 3 tries, bang, bang, bang. And we're in a sniff again. But we haven't kept ourselves in touch. And the style of rugby that we play isn't about dominance and building a score and getting ahead of the opposition and making them try and rein us in again. We're often a little bit tit for tat. It's often they score, we score, they score, we score. And we try and stay in touch. And then we often poach it in the last 10, 15. Maybe that needs to change slightly because it doesn't work for every opposition you play. And it doesn't work for every fixture you play, such as knockouts.
We finish with the doom and gloom and have a little look forward to the next couple of weeks.
Well, what's there to look forward to?
Well, look, what is there to look forward to? That's a good question. What we have to look forward to the rest of the year is giving ourselves the best possible opportunity to finish as high as we can. We can still finish 5th, 6th, 4th isn't completely out of the question, but probably is.
God, 5th would be disappointing now, wouldn't it?
Yeah, of course it would. But
that would be such a tease.
It gives you a chance next year to be in Europe's elite competition again next year. It gives us another crack at playing some big sides, which is what we want. Getting sides like the Sharks back to the Stoop or, you know, playing, you know, your Ulsters, your Leinsters, whoever it may be, I don't care. It gives you a chance to play in Europe's top tier, which is what we want, right? We've got home game against Newcastle back at the Stoop, which I'm looking forward to because it feels like we've not been there in months.
Well, sorry to interrupt. What do you do now then, the last 3 games? We're playing for a Champions Cup spot. We should probably get it given we're playing the bottom 2 sides in the league. What do you do with your squad? Are you starting to build for next year now? We've already mentioned Northmoor 13, marching on the wing for the rest of the season because Northmoor needs to make that 13 shirt his own. Are you doing anything else? Because I'm talking about rebuilding for next season now, and I think the role of Finn Baxter is going to be crucial, and I thought he did pretty well when he came on again. Again, especially carrying in the loose. He's looking like a little bit more of a wrecking ball these days. Sam Riley got on the pitch. Is he going to be our number 2 hooker next year? If so, let's see a little bit more of him in the next few games. Are you doing anything different with your squad?
I think it's possible that the slightly older war horses in Danny and Marla may have either reduced minutes or maybe won't start. Your Baxters will play.
Yeah, I thought Zaltima did really well when he came on.
Yeah, Zaltima.
He actually played about 4 or 5 minutes into the red, and I thought there was going to be some kind of fumble from somebody in the team at that point, but we just kept going and he kept fizzing it around and kept the tempo going, and I thought he did well when he came on, so I wouldn't mind seeing him get more than, I would say, 2 minutes, but it ended up being about 7 because of the clock going in the red, but I wouldn't mind seeing a bit more of him.
I don't think we'll change too much. I think you just got to try and win the next 3 games. So you try and beat Newcastle at home, then we can have a beer in hopefully the early summer sun and watch you charge around on the stoop for the Quinn's Ams. Then we go to that, Big
that'll
Sun
be the highlight.
It.
You're right.
Yeah, it will be the highlight.
Quinn's Ams win at the stoop.
Your
hopefully
debut
in some
at the stoop.
Sunshine.
Yeah, it'd be great. And then we have Big Summer Kickoff, which hopefully we sell as many tickets for as we can. We go and beat Bath. We have a big day. We listen to the Kaiser Chiefs. Everything's, you know, fun and good and enjoyable and watching some good rugby. And then, you know, we go to Leicester and we see what happens on the last day of the year. Do we beat them? Do we not? Who knows?
Do you know the date for that one?
I think it's the 6th of May, so it'll be the same day.
Oh, yeah, King's Coronation, Saturday, isn't King's Coronation, that's why they've changed the kickoff times. Do you fancy it? Me going?
It'll be my first game of cricket that day, first league game of the season. And as first team captain, I've got certain things to uphold to. I can't miss the first game because I'm going to watch us play at Leicester with a dead rubber. But
yeah, well, if you say dead rubber, if I can be a deluded Quinns fan for one moment, having been negative the entire episode, which I've done quite a lot in recent episodes, I apologise. But to finish off with a bit of delusion, if Leicester somehow becomes a straight shootout, will you be there? That pause means no. You're terrible.
What do you mean?
Terrible.
Vincent,
you've
got
to be there.
Vincent, what games?
We're playing Leicester in a straight shootout for the playoffs.
I am going to go out on a limb and say that by the time we get to Leicester, I think we will be outside of the chance of being in the top four anyway. So I don't think that's a decision I have to make.
But if it is within the realms of possibility,
I'll have a look at the weather forecast midweek and see if cricket's going to get rained.
The weather forecast says bad day to be a beer.
We'll see. Well, look, that's where we'll leave it. Apologies for the doom and gloom. Hopefully we've given some light to the start of your week. Our European campaign has unfortunately fallen short. Are we still clinging on domestically? Can we finish in the top four? Who knows? We'll see. But thank you very much for joining us. We really appreciate it. And we look forward to seeing all of you, all of our friends, all of our family, the whole of the Quinns boys and girls down at the Stoop on the 15th of April. If you are at a loss, at a loose end at the end of the day, don't leave your seats at the end of kickoff because you will see Will charging around the Stoop for the Quinns Ams. It'll be a good fun one to watch. So hopefully we'll see you all there.
I'd love to see a player podcast after that, just bashing me for my performance.
I'm looking forward to it. I'm gonna get the notepad out. I'm gonna be
that would be
out.
A good spin off, wouldn't it? In minute 67 and 30 seconds, that knock on terrible. You better
what we're
than
gonna
that.
Do? I hope there's been a few people that would stay around and watch, and we'll have a list of tweets as long as my arm of mistakes that you made in the game, and we'll absolutely kill you for it.
As long as the drum's there and you get some good chants going, then I'll be well.
Yeah, it'll be there.
But yeah, that's class. Thank you very much for listening, everybody. Project Harlequins, the rebuild starts now. Our season is not over. There's plenty more to learn and achieve in the next few weeks. Catch you at the Stoop in a few weeks' time. Come on, the Quinns.
Come on, you Quinns.